that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. Today we talk with two artists whose work is inspired by their travels. Simone Sennett, an art instructor at Butte College, has created large paintings based on her artistic impressions of colorful houses and deep blue sea and sky that she saw on her trip to Chile. Karma Boyer is an art photographer, and her captured images from locations in the U.S., Europe, and India are on display at the Orland Art Center. We'll be talking with both those artists over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Mall with the North State Arts Calendar.
This weekend, Reading's Axiom Repertory Theater finishes its run of the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. See this funny, Tony-winning musical at Reading's Old City Hall tonight or tomorrow at 7:30. The final performance is Sunday at 2. It's your last chance to enjoy Chico Theater Company's production of Chicago, the popular show with all that jazz, the longest-running American musical in Broadway history, plays at CTC tonight and tomorrow at 7:30. The final performance, Sunday at 2. In Chico's downtown plaza this evening, experience the Alice Peak Experience at the Friday night concert. The band plays family-friendly dance rock starting at 7 o'clock. It's time again for the National All-Media Juried Art Exhibition at the Chico Arts Center. Beginning next Thursday, local, regional, and national artists display a variety of creations. That's the calendar for this week. Thanks for listening. Author Langston Hughes pointed out that the mission of an artist is to interpret beauty to people, the beauty within themselves.
Let's join our visual art expert Dolores at A Beautiful Life Furnishings, a store in downtown Chico that's currently displaying artwork by Dolores' guest, Simone Sennett.
This is Dolores Mitchell, and I'm speaking today with Simone Sennett about her exhibition of paintings, which are at Beautiful Life Furnishings. Simone, first I'd like to hear a little bit about your teaching at Butte College, how you approach teaching painting.
I've been there for 18 years. It's developed over time, but my main interest in teaching is developing the individual for the individual, finding their own personal style and how they relate to their environment with their style. We really talk about what it is that they want to paint about. So there are projects geared toward developing the fundamentals. After that, it's really important for them to find what it is that they're interested in painting about and developing their own series and style based on that.
Well, I have a very special person to interview. Her name is Taya, and she is the daughter of Simone. Therefore, she must make art. Tell us about that.
Well, I just learned from my mom, and I paint different from my mom. I like things neat, and she likes things like out of the world.
Is it fun to paint with her?
Yeah, sometimes.
Oh, and sometimes not?
Well, usually it's fun, but sometimes it can't be because she's usually with her students helping them a lot.
Do you want to tell them about you doing the underpainting for the large painting that's on the postcard for the show?
Oh, so this was a collaboration.
It was.
Oh, my goodness.
It was.
How did you do that?
Well, I started the background off with purple and like kind of like pink. And then my mom left like a fat rectangle. I don't know if it was fat, but...
of the purple?
Yeah. So it was the purple, and then she made it into like buildings and put her artwork in it.
Did you like the effect when she finished?
Not really, because she painted it and made it all about hers. And she just left a little baby piece of purple. And so I tried coloring it in with purple, and my mom was like, Taya, get off of that.
Well, I love the fact that you can speak your mind. You're not shy about saying what you really think, right?
Yes.
It's wonderful you have such an independent daughter and that you can collaborate. Well, let's get back to your teaching. If someone is starting out in your beginning class and they're kind of terrified and feel they have no talent, what do you do?
Well, what I do in the very beginning is I talk to them a little bit about art in general. I show them slides and images of art around the world through art history. We talk a little bit about why pieces are famous, what it is that they like. And I talk a little bit about fear in the sense that when we respond to things, many times we don't like them because we don't understand them. So we start like that, and then we start with a very, very basic project working on watercolor paper, which I give them for free. I do supply all the supplies the first 2 weeks so that there's no feeling like they're spending a lot of money on art supplies and they might waste them. I want them to be very, very free and not worry about the cost, because I think that with many students, that is an underlying fear as well. When it comes to the fear of making marks, we do things like blind contour, so that it becomes fun and we disengage the brain in trying to make things perfect. And then we build from watercolor pencils, diluting them to show that they actually turn into like watercolor that looks like paint. And then we start adding paint to that. So it's sort of building blocks.
Well, let's consider your own paintings at this wonderful exhibit. It's quite a large show, and your paintings, some of them are quite large.
Yes, I tend to paint large. There's actually some 16 by 20 inch paintings here, which is very, very rare for me. Some of the times my paintings will be demonstrations that I do in class, and then I show the students how you can do a variation of mixed media and then turn it into a composition by eliminating things, really focusing on what the content is going to be rather than it just being a bunch of different things. Two of the pieces in the show are actually smaller pieces from a demo that I did that I turned into paintings. And then the largest piece in the show is 8 foot by 6 foot. That is a large windmill piece. 5 by 4 is the standard size that I've noticed that I've been painting the last few years. And then 40 by 30. So there's quite a few of those.
And does size make a difference?
In regards to...
your expressiveness, or maybe the gestures of your hand putting the paint on, or how it's perceived by people.
I definitely think so. You know, people look at big paintings and all of a sudden they think, oh, they're really expensive. So that tends to be a perception with some people that look at art. For me, size matters in variations. I tend to have different moods. And when I'm introspective and calm and quiet, I like to sit down with a smaller canvas. I like to draw on it, and I like to make marks, and I like to collage. And I like to go through the process of putting things down and manipulating composition. So it's not that I'm not energetic at that time, but it's like reading a good book. I'm going through that really slow process, and it's a pretty quiet process for me. The larger paintings are completely different. I tend to have a lot more energy. I can go through the same step-by-step process, but that usually doesn't end up until the very end of the painting. But yes, the larger paintings I start, sometimes I'll put socks on my hands and dilute wash paint with water. If I'm using acrylic, if I'm using oil, I'll put turpentine with the oil on the socks. Do large washes to start out with and then build on that. In the end, I end up making marks the same as the small canvases, but obviously the composition is very different on a large scale.
I'm seeing a lot of house shapes in your canvases that are here.
I just returned the beginning of the year from Chile. We spent some time in Valparaiso, which is this amazing art town on the more coastal area of Chile, but it's where Pablo Neruda has one of his houses. Everything there, it's just these sort of large box shapes, and they're all squished together like San Francisco with bright colors and murals and everything, and the sky is really blue. We were there in January, which was the summer. I came back just thrilled with the environment and the energy, and it was fun and playful, and so that's what that series is about, and that's why the blue in the background is really important.
And you also have words within your paintings.
I do. You know, it's funny. I really try to keep my paintings fluid, and I find that a lot of the times if I search for words, they're more contrived. So sometimes the words are actually whatever is laying around. The first thing I pick up, the first stencil I pick up, some people will ask me, like, why did you put that letter? And it's because that happened to be sitting there. But other times I'll choose something for the shape. And every now and then, like the Chile series, the word like Punta Arenas is in there, or Puerto Natales, which are two of the places we went down by Patagonia and Antarctica.
And how about the Chico and the Orville environment that you're more familiar with? Does that work its way into your art as well?
Most definitely. I live across the street from Butte College in Butte Valley. I have 20 acres with horses. So there's a series that I have. There's two here that are called Butte Valley. It's just stunning. It really is. The hills, the buttes. I'm very, very affected. I'm originally from Los Angeles. And so the nature here is incredible. The colors are so vibrant in the spring. Yes, they definitely affects me. There is some work that is about Butte Valley.
As I'm listening to you, there's a lot of spontaneity in your art, but there must be a degree of planning as well. Your compositions, do you do some thumbnail sketches, or is it all improvised right on the surface?
Completely improvised. Never, ever a thumbnail sketch. I don't even think I've ever owned a sketchbook, actually. I don't require it for my students either. What I will do at times is I will print out a picture. On the Chile series, at times I would print out a picture of Valparaiso. I would look at it and then put it down and then quickly sketch some lines based on what I remember of looking at the image. I do not copy things, though. There will be times that I will print something out, and I will, at the end of a painting, if it's a really loose abstract painting, I might project a drawing that I've done or a drawing that I find that I manipulate on a projector, and I might do a quick line sketch on top of the painting and then work it into the painting.
Well, it's a very exciting exhibition. Can you give us details on where it's located?
It's located at 250 East 1st Street. The shop is this darling, amazing shop. If you haven't been here, it's called A Beautiful Life Furnishings.
How long will it be up, Simone?
It will be here until the end of July.
Come on down and be excited about not only Chile, but also the wonderful area that's right around the North State. Thank you, Simone.
You can see those paintings by Simone Sennett at A Beautiful Life Furnishings in downtown Chico.
This is Dolores Mitchell, and today I'm speaking with Karma Boyer, who is having an exhibition of her photography called Wanderlust at the Orland Arts Center. She'll be having a reception Friday, July 7th, 3 to 7 p.m. Karma, tell me about this show.
The title Wanderlust is representational of all of my travels all over the world and my joy for travel. I'll have work there from trips to Utah, some places around California, trips to France, Norway, and to India.
You've been assuring me that you're not a multimillionaire, but you managed to travel anyway.
I'm definitely not a multimillionaire. I'm a physical therapist by day. Photography is a way of introducing and having art be a part of my life.
Tell me about that change in your attitude towards photography. You had a career change when you saw a wonderful exhibition.
In 2005, my husband and I went to Cabo San Lucas, and I was inspired by an exhibit that I saw there to start taking photos again and doing some research on equipment and then also just learning more about some of the technical ends of it so that I could turn what I see into art.
What was the first project you undertook after that experience of having your eyes open to the possibility of photography?
At that point, we were doing a lot of trips to Utah. So Bryce and Zion, and I think a lot of my photography then was from those trips.
I've noticed a strong sense of design in your photography. You love architecture, and of course, if you're out in Utah, you're going to see marvelous stone sculptures. What attracts you about that?
I think I tend to see things more minimal. I'll take a scene and I'll pull out in my mind's eye a certain part of the scene. I think one example would be my one that I've called To Infinity. It was taken outside of our apartment in Paris. It's a staircase that goes upwards and it's primarily blue and white. That was part of a very small section of the entire place of where we were.
Looking through the photographs you have sent me, you do have that feeling of somehow questing for an experience. We look out into the distance and we see a marvelous sunset, or we look off the top of a building, or we look across the sand dunes towards what appears to be infinity.
With my photography, I absolutely love to get out in nature. I love to travel. And my hope is by taking my camera out there, one, it enables me to linger and enjoy the moment and see things differently and look for things a little bit differently. And then it also enables me to come home and have that experience again and then to share it with others.
It's a wonderful time to have an exhibition of travel photography right in the summer when people are getting ready to travel and packing their cameras. So you're going to be at this reception. Are you willing to give some hints to people?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love to talk about my travels and where I've been and what's wonderful about specific places. That's kind of where my passion is. I'm happy to talk about, you know, some technical aspects of photography too, but it's more the experience and what you see.
What would you advise people who perhaps are not professional photographers, but really want to bring back some great photographs from their trips?
You can do some amazing things with your camera phone. You don't necessarily have to lug around a whole lot of equipment. I have a friend on Facebook. She traveled through Europe with her husband a couple of years ago, and she took some fabulous, amazing photos just with her camera phone. So, you know, you can start really simple. It doesn't have to be thousands of dollars worth of equipment.
We're looking at one of your photographs that is an architectural detail. It's a detail you wouldn't see from ground level very clearly. You're up on the roof.
I've titled it Rooftop Mandawa, and it's a photo I took on the morning that we were leaving. This particular castle has lots of nooks and crannies and stairwells, really interesting angles and views. This was one that I didn't actually see until the last day. I came across it and it reminded me of Three Watchmen looking over the town, but yet there's a little bit of a flower effect with the front of it. And then with the smog gives it really interesting light and gives some filtering effect to the sun. So it actually has a very peaceful look.
So you find a detail can tell the story as well as the entire building.
That particular building, it reminds me of the best exotic Marigold Hotel in that it kind of has lots of character and architecture, but it's not necessarily in the best repair, but it's beautiful nonetheless.
We were looking at a photograph of sand dunes.
The Mesquite sand dunes are as you come into the west entrance of Death Valley National Park in California, and they really look like nothing. There is a pullover there, and I'd driven by them many times not knowing what was beyond. I was looking online and found photos of these sand dunes, and they were stunning, and I realized that I hadn't explored them to their full extent. So my husband and I packed up our tripods and our cameras, hiked across the sand dunes, and we found this amazing display of sand and curves and hills and valleys all set against the backdrop of the mountains.
You managed to have caught a shadow that makes the most beautiful S-curve that seems to go to infinity.
That's part of being there at sunset. You get the shadows, you get the light, you get the warmth, and I think it's a very kind of sensual sort of scene with the curves.
There are some hardships in photographing sand dunes. What were some of those?
It's hard to walk in sand for a significant distance. You also have to be very careful because you don't want the sand in your lenses. Also, the sand got all over in the bottoms of our tripods, so we had to make sure we cleaned those out really thoroughly so we didn't ruin our equipment.
What's it like having your husband photograph at the same time that you are?
It's great because we can support each other and have different ideas, and we tend to see things a little differently. He shoots more wide angle is kind of how he sees things. I tend to see things more flattened, compressed, more with a zoom lens. And then it's nice too just to have that support when that early morning sunrise shoot, when one of you wants to stay in bed, the other one often wants to get up. When we were in Utah, we were actually staying in a hotel for one night and I really wanted to sleep in. And he's like, no, we want to get the sunrise shoot. So we did, and actually that's one of my photos in my show.
You were showing your work at Art at the Matador. How was that to get feedback, and what sorts of things did people notice about your work?
It was really nice to have the feedback. I think in general, people were very appreciative, and it was nice to know what people saw in my work. It was also pretty fun for me to see that some of the photos that I didn't think necessarily would be appreciated by others really were.
Let's look at one more of your photographs, a taro field from Hawaii.
That was one where my husband and I were in Kauai for our 20th anniversary, and we had our camera gear, but we didn't necessarily have any specific photo shoot in mind. We were driving back towards where we were staying. There was this beautiful taro field with a beautiful sunset, so we pulled over and seized the moment.
To what extent do you alter images like this?
I like to do as much as I can in camera. So getting the light, the color balance, my depth of field, all of that in camera. But then when I get the image home, I want the viewer to experience what it was like to be in that scene. So typically it'll take maybe a little bit of adjusting to make sure, oh, was my horizon right? The colors, the camera when you shoot in a raw file are a little bit flat. So then do some color boosting, adjust the contrast. So again, I'm not trying to create something that wasn't there, but trying to create the experience of being there.
How about the filters that you sometimes use?
The filters are what go on the front of the camera when I'm actually doing the shoot. So with this particular scene, I had a neutral density filter that I put on, believe it was graduated, and that allows the sky not to be so bright that you can't get the dark shadows. The camera is not able to see the wide light gamut that our eyes can.
For those who have never been to the Orland Art Center, the center itself is quite an experience, a Masonic Lodge building of 1913 that has been repurposed. 2,500 square feet. You were saying there's a wonderful staff that helps install the work beautifully.
Yeah, most of my interactions have been with Ray Turnbull. They have two additional women who create a new work of art from my art. they pay careful attention to how things are placed. Then they have a gentleman that comes along and lights everything. And I've been there for a few shows and I've been very impressed with the presentation and the whole experience. It's very nice.
Karma Boyer is having an exhibition of her photography called Wanderlust. She'll be having a reception Friday, July 7th, 3 to 7 p.m. The Orland Arts Center is located at 732 4th Street, right in the middle of Orland. Thank you so much.
That's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. If you ever miss this program at its regular broadcast time, you can hear it online anytime after 3:30 Friday at mynspr.org. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts in the North State. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio.